This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport. Powered by fans.
Back of the Nest preview show. Sponsored by Pitch Sport. Available to download on the App Store and Google Play. PitchDMM.com.
Welcome everybody to the Back of the Nest preview podcast. I am your host Terence Ford, and this week normal service is resumed as Albert returns from holiday and rejoins Eskiff in our 1-1-1 formation and will look to pick apart Chelsea on Saturday afternoon. Yes, welcome everyone to the show, Eskiff, as you...
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. So the only thing left to say is, you in? Order now on the McDonald's app. You can also get reward points delivered too. So the ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants, 18 plus, rewards registration required, points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Sure, welcome.
Hello, thank you very much.
And Mr. Curley, welcome back to the fold.
Hello, mate. Nice to be back in the fold.
Nick came in, stepped in very ably last week, but a bit like Dreyer Reed of old, as soon as McCarthy was back, he's out of the team.
And sorry, you're in.
Well, no questions asked.
Exactly. Straight back in. Who do I need to smash up? Because that's not McCarthy.
Well, yeah. I mean, there's plenty. We'll get into that in a minute because I'm gasping for this beer. So I'm gonna pour it. Either of you two got anything?
Water.
Same as 2 weeks running. Disgrace.
Yeah, sorry.
Albert, it's not fast day for you, is it?
No, I've also got water, but it's been brewed with malted barley and hop extract to form a lovely bottle of Heineken.
Well, okay, I've got a beer for you this week. It's a ceaseless commitment to purity and quality. You know that every ice cold crisp sip will deliver that richly satisfying flavour with subtle fruity notes. A traditional taste. What beer do you think that is?
Spunk Bomb?
Carling.
It's a bottle of Heineken that I am drinking.
Why it's doesn't all it I had say that on mine?
It says it on their website. I took the beer. For 150 years, a ceaseless commitment to purity and quality have made Heineken the most iconic beer brand in the world. When you see the red star on the green bottle, you know every ice cold sip will deliver that richly satisfying flavor with subtle fruity notes. A tradition of taste that has lived on for over a century and a half, thanks to the simplicity and quality of the ingredients and the meticulous attention to the brewing process. So they're all chatting shit.
Do you know what? Me and Vanessa watched an episode of Buffy yesterday, which is, I think I've said this on the show before, the best show ever made in the history of television. And
just
I'm not
once
joking.
Or twice.
Debatable.
But it's an episode that everyone hates and that I don't think is as bad as everyone else. That's another story. Where basically the guy who runs the pub at the university she goes to poisons people who drink a certain kind of beer. So they turn into cavemen. And when he's talking about it, he doesn't say, oh, I didn't do it. He was like, yeah, they deserved it, them and their fucking microbreweries. He didn't care. But I was like, this is from like the year 2001. He was a good time. He knew what arseholes these people were.
Yeah, I was hearing a story the other day about how it's killing off casks and all sorts of microbreweries. Yeah, someone had a go at me. But there you go. Enjoy your beer, people. Enjoy whatever beer you want to enjoy. Talking of TV shows, this is one for the slightly older crowd, but I was delighted to find out today that Desmond's is going to be on Netflix.
Nice.
Remember Desmond's?
Love Desmond's.
Exactly. Albert, probably not so much.
I remember it being on, was it on Channel 4? Well, certainly repeat. Yeah. No, I do remember it.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to the episode. One of my mates from school was an extra. He kicked the ball through the shop window and had to, and his part was just going back in and asking for it back. Please, sir, can I have my ball back kind of role? So, yeah, really looking forward to a bit of nostalgia there for when that comes up. Right. Talking about nostalgia, something that hasn't happened for a while, Albert. Massive derby win for Watford on the weekend.
Ooh.
Literally didn't see the result.
Well, Watford beat Luton 1-0. I think it was the first time they've played in 17 years, something like that. Kind of similar to when we first played Brighton back in, what was it, the 5-0, when was that? 2002, yeah. But Watford, believe it or not, through the medium of TikTok, released a video complaining that Luton only came to foul their players. Now, I'm going to stay with you, Albert. That's taking a piss, isn't it?
Well, bunch of hypocrites, really, aren't they? I mean, that. It's, yeah, I mean, to be fair, it is a completely different Watford side to anyone that we've played, because all they've got like 15 players that are injured or refusing to play. So, you know, maybe the new breed are a bit softer and a bit more,
Don't like it up them.
Not weathered, yeah. And maybe, you know, and did you see they had to board up the statue of Graham Taylor?
Did they really?
They boarded up the statue of Graham Taylor through fear of it being, I guess the word is, vandalised by the Luton hardcore. And then I saw some comments on Twitter that Luton were disgusted at the accusation that they might do that because they really like Graham Taylor.
So. I mean, there's a, if you were looking at odds, I reckon it would be like 1 to 100 against that the people defending Churchill's statue were probably Luton fans, let's be honest.
they did both have very round heads.
Yeah, but there you go. That's enough about Luton. Let's move on to another tin pot club, and that's Charlton. I've got a new owner, Hesketh. Thomas Sandgaard claims to be a rock star and is CEO of some medical company, but Charlton are excited, aren't they?
Yeah. Well, I mean, we just spent the last 5 minutes before we started recording seeing whether he was CEO of Rockstar Energy Drink or Rockstar the computer game people. It turns out he's neither. He just calls himself a Rockstar CEO. So that in itself is a twat.
Some would say Charlton have got the owner they deserve.
They have, yeah. The pictures of him like rocking out with a guitar or doing the metal horns or whatever those things are called, devil horns. He's just a twat. And the story that I saw today was him saying, I rang Steve Parrish to say that we would see them in 2 years in the Premier League. And he hasn't called me back.
Yeah, he's been left on red. But yeah, I mean, someone did tweet me saying the only way they're seeing us in the Premier League in 2 years is if Steve Parrish gives him a ticket for a Palace game. Some great pictures of Thomas Sandgaard, as you say, rocking out or with a Charlton scarf around his neck or whatever. Some great captions. Let's do this was the first one with a guitar, but then they get very special, Albert. Boom, Charlton is back. Now, let's get over past the fact that he said Charlton is back and not Charlton are back. But boom, it's all sounding a bit Alan Pardew. Alan Partridge. Well,
to be fair, you're not far off by saying Alan Pardew. Yeah, I mean, I've only seen the Let's Do This one. And it's very strange because if you photoshopped out the Charlton badge of that image, it would just be a middle-aged bloke with a guitar with a slogan that says, "Let's do." It's like, what are you doing? because he looks like he's about to shred some mad solo. And I'm not sure that's what Charlton need.
And he's got a suit on. Well, he's got jeans with a suit jacket and a Charlton shirt underneath, and a guitar with a United States of America flagged. What do they call it? What's the thing that holds the guitar on your shoulder?
It's called a guitar strap.
My brain has gone to mush.
What do they call that strap that holds the guitar on you? Oh, yeah, that's right, the guitar strap.
Two sips of this Heineken, mate. That's the problem.
So you're on the hard stuff now, bro. And the gusset of his jeans is under severe pressure with the wide sort of slash stance that he's pulling. He's going to come a cropper there, I think.
Yeah, well, another one of the captions is Hesketh: Charlton's future is bright. Now, is this, should Steve Parish be concerned here that he's going to go after Mark Bright as manager or something?
Oh, God. If they can take Mark Bright as a commentator for their website, I'd be all over it, because whenever I listen to him on the reserve games, he is the worst commentator of all time. I thought it was... You know how clowns wear really bright clothes and have like really leery wigs? that was where I was going with it, but either way. Haven't they like just been able to sign a player for the first time properly in like, that isn't Johnny Esther in like years?
Yeah. And
all of a sudden they're buying it and they're still shit.
Did you see who they bought though, Albert?
No.
A legend of both your clubs, Ben Watson.
Oh, awesome. Did they announce him like playing the triangle or something, saying, let's go?
No, I mean, I was obviously, I'm sad to see Ben Watson in a Charlton kit, to be honest. But no, it was just sort of the standard. It was really boring, actually. Let's face it. If Ben Watson was slightly more famous, he'd have a boring James Milner-esque account, wouldn't he? Because he's just always been a bit boring.
But I mean, he's a Millwall fan. He's played for Watford. He's, you know, he's kind of, his stock has dropped in terms of being anywhere near a Palace legend. You know, no offence. I mean, he scored a winner in a cup final. Big up yourself, Ben. But, you know, you're not doing yourself any favours around SE25.
No, certainly not. He won't be taking Neil Shipley's place as one of the ambassadors, will he?
Moving on.
Yeah. Talking of things you shouldn't be touching, the new handball rule is getting newer. Love that segue. Come on.
Brilliant. That is fantastic, actually.
The Premier League have come together to look at the new handball rule. And
was that a segue as well? The come together thing?
There was no coming together. Leave it. And they've decided they're going to be more lenient, Hesketh. So the referees now, I feel a little bit like here, the referees looked at the rules in the early part when it came in, and they said, for the first few games, let's just make it look as ridiculous as it is.
Yeah.
So it gets changed.
Yeah, well, it's worked because it's been absolutely mind-blowingly ridiculous. I think that, you know, I'm sure we'll talk briefly about the Everton game, but the thing that gets me is, you know, not only is the Ward penalty given very harsh and all Ferrari that went around with it, but Calvert-Lewin, like, moves his hands towards the ball, it hits his lower arm, and there's no looking at the monitor, they barely talk about it. Absolutely.
But that's what I mean. That's part of me that makes me think they said, let's make it look as ridiculous as possible, because his arms aren't technically making a wider silhouette. So why we can all see that he's moved his arms towards the ball?
Yeah.
Because they're within his silhouette. It's just another scenario where it looks absolutely ridiculous.
Yeah, it is ridiculous. And, you know, I think the fact, you know, you get all these salty Man United fans saying, oh, Hodgson never moaned about it when he got a penalty, when actually he did.
Oh, I thought I did. Yeah.
There you go. Cheers, Roy. Yeah, I mean, whenever you get new rules, it tends to go a bit mental and then they calm down a bit. But I think this handball has gone absolutely insane the last couple of weeks. And You know,
well, there's been six handball penalties already this season, which is, I think, as many as there were in the 17-18 season. And the most there's ever been in a season is 19. And at the moment, we're on pace for 88.
Awesome. There you go. like, what will happen is that there'll be an incident in the Chelsea game where Chelsea will benefit because the rules have, you know, become more lenient or whatever it is. And then we can moan about that next week.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I'm glad it's been changed. I mean, we haven't, although on the surface we've benefited from it because of Lindelof's handball, but we would have won that game anyway because we won the game 3-1. So it didn't gain us any points. We've lost out on a point against it for Everton. Everton have gained 2 points. Newcastle have gained a point. Spurs have lost out on two because that Dyer one is just... I mean, his name says it all, really, doesn't it? It's ridiculous. How can you give someone handball for facing the wrong way where he's not even looking at the ball? What is he supposed to do? Everything's in a normal position. But again, letter of the law, how it's actually written down, the law is written down. His hand is above his shoulder and it's in the penalty area. So again, another example where I believe they've just made it to look very, very ridiculous. But yeah, so that will be changed. But yeah, absolutely, you can just see it now. Chelsea just getting away with a couple or something like that. Where
was it this time last year? I can't think it was this time last season or the season before. They really clamped down on, like, you know, holding in the penalty area, and like the first was it last season or the season before? Like for a few weeks.
Yeah, it was just people falling over in the backpack.
Penalties for everything. Like, it's like, you have a pen. And it's a similar thing. It got so ridiculous that they were like, oh, do you know what? We're probably going to just let that go. You know, and now you watch set pieces and everybody's all over each other and it's gone back to square one. And, you know, it's annoying that it takes, I mean, especially when you're on the, you know, you're on the wrong end of it, albeit that we were on the right end of it the week before. But I think at least the difference there is that at least IU was having a shot there. You know, the Dyer one was just a speculative nod into the area. I mean, that one's worse than the Joel Ward one for me. But the thing that really irked is that they spent 2 minutes in that Tottenham game reviewing the offside before then reviewing the handball. And it's like, well, he wasn't offside, so let's review the subsequent handball. And they give the penalty. But if they'd have done that, you know, the day before for the Palace game, it's quite abundantly clear that Richarlison is offside. So if Joel Ward doesn't handball it,
that's they've cocked up there. I mean, that is fundamentally broken, because if the ball misses Joel Ward's hand, he's offside.
Yeah, completely.
It's the most ludicrous thing ever. Like, surely they've made a mistake there, because as soon as it leaves his head before it touches his hand, the target he's aiming at is Richarlison, so he's offside. Mm-hmm. And the flag should go up.
I haven't combed through the rules. I'm not that thorough. But, you know, who was right? Were they right? Were they right to do it in the Newcastle game, and they should have done it in the Palace game? Or is that, you know, is it just the handball's handball, doesn't matter about the offside, and the Newcastle Tottenham situation was the one that is wrong? Because either way, it's a glaring absence of consistency.
Well, considering worries us all the time, they definitely got it wrong in our game. So that must be the way round.
Definitely.
All set out to screw us over. Right, what else we got? There's loads of transfer rumours at the moment, obviously with the window closing, well, the first window closing on the 5th of October, which will be the international window, so we won't be able to trade. God. We won't be able to trade with teams outside of England after the 5th of October. Now, first link, we've got Benteke link with Spurs. Heskiff, is this the time that Benteke's fruitless few years finally comes to an end at Palace and he leaves, or does it rely on someone else coming in first?
I think we'd be a bit silly to sell him without getting someone else in. You know, we've complained a lot about not having enough options up front. And I think now that we've got IU, Batshuayi and Benteke, that's not bad. If we get rid of Benteke and we're back to IU and Batshuayi, especially we're playing two up front now, I think that leaves us short. But as the rumours have told us, you know, we're looking at strikers, whether that's a Brewster or Edouard or some other unknown. I think that's something we're looking at. And, you know, I actually think a move to Tottenham will probably do quite well for him, because I don't think they'll expect him to score loads of goals, because he won't be the focal point. If he can sort of set plays up for players like Son and Kane, I think he'll do quite well there. He'd obviously score against Palace, which would be a pain in the ass. But, you know, I think if we do sell him, we should do it only once we've got another striker in, because I think otherwise we're leaving ourselves short, especially if Batshuayi's alone, isn't it? So, I mean, our long-term planning takes another hit if we do that. But I do wonder what sort of money we'd get for him. You know, he's sort of thinking 10 million or eight or 10 million maybe. And I think we'd have to consider it.
Yeah. Or Albert, the question, as always, could just be, where's Connor Wickham? He could come back and take over the mantle from Benteke, right?
Oh, I mean, they could definitely have him. If I mean, I'm not quite at the end of that Spurs documentary on Amazon, and you know, all they're going on about is the injuries. So you could see Connor Wickham slotting in there quite nicely.
Yeah, I think I'm on episode. I've just finished episode 5 of that. I'm thoroughly enjoying it. Mourinho is absolute box office. Yeah,
completely. Just the way he says "fucking hell,"
and calling everyone. I won't swear, but the C bomb. Yeah, all the time. You've got to be beep.
Yeah.
And I'm like, hang on, because the first time he did it, I was like, hang on, they haven't been bleeping out swear words. What did he just say? And I'm thinking, oh my goodness. Yeah. Have you found that they're really shit at G'ing each other up before games?
I was about to say that.
They're terrible.
It's amazing that the G'ing up before a game, and it's the same in the Man City one that I watched a bit of, where they basically just go, come on, lads, let's fucking do it. And then they're like, oh, okay. Or come on, lads, first minute. Okay, and then they'll pop. You know, I'm like, what?
Sorry, was that first minute?
Honestly, that's what it's like. And then, you know, next week it's a different play, and he's like, all right, lads, come on, let's win. Yeah. And then they'll look down the phone. I'm like, what's going on? You get more rowdy than that in the fucking Glaziers.
To be fair, I think Mourinho has a point, because you sit like, I know Harry Kane isn't the club captain, which I found a bit of a surprise, because obviously I think Lloris is out for like the first few weeks in the documentary. So Harry Kane's doing the speech, and you know, I'm not going to have a dig at Harry Kane, be like, well, this is a bit dull. But then it's like club captain Hugo Lloris is back from injury, so he's doing the team talk. And then it's like, yeah, come on. And it's like, oh, it was a little, I think, give it back to fucking Harry Kane. So you get, yeah, like, you can see why Mourinho's like, come on, lads, you do need to be C words. Like, just make this a bit more interesting, if only for the cameras.
Yeah. I'll miss the Sunday league days where it'd be like, Gaz, you remember that flash git in the middle of the park? You let him know you're fucking there after a minute's time. You kick him in the air. Yeah, come on, boys. And you get it fucking stuck into him, boys. You know, just like, get it, like, actually like singling people out and actually getting everyone hyped up. That's what you got to do, right? Come on, do it proper. Anyway, Scott Dan is being linked with a move to Fulham. Albert, now we've obviously playing a centre midfielder at centre back at the moment. It's a good idea, yeah. Who thought of that one? But so we're obviously playing Cheku in there at the moment. Now, of course, he does moonlight as a centre back for Senegal from time to time. Scott Dan's 33. If we can get a fee for him, is it wise? Or is this a bit like, I remember having these conversations about Glenn Murray as well, saying if we can get a fee for him, we should sell him.
This is a real heart overhead conundrum, isn't it? I don't want to see Scott Dan rocking up for another London club in the Premier League. You know, the reality is, as good as he has been, you know, at the end of last season, well, when he sort of came back last season, you know, he was in really good form just before the lockdown. And I mean, nobody had a good time of it in the restart, but you know, he's really sort of found his form again, especially after such a horrific injury. But the reality is, he probably wouldn't have got that opportunity if everybody else in that position was fit. I mean, you know, I think I know the answer to this question, but, you know, if everybody makes a miracle recovery in the next couple of weeks, is Roy Hodgson going to say to Scott Daniel, the shirt is still yours to lose, sort of thing, and those guys have got to wait? I mean, I don't think Roy operates like that. So for Scott Dan, you know, I think there was a time where I would have been happy to see him leave, but seeing how he's bounced back and, you know, the partnership that he's formed, you know, with to be honest, anyone who he's slotted in with, he hasn't looked too ropey. I think it's one of those things. If the money's decent, I can see us accepting it. I wouldn't necessarily like it. But that is one of our better positions in terms of options when we actually have those options.
Or Hesketh, as you always make in your outrageous prediction, he could do a job up front.
Listen, I think we missed a trick there. Talking about selling Benteke, we keep Dan having a striker. You know what? It's a tough one with Dan, like Albert said, because I thought he was pretty much done. Until this last little burst that he's had. And until Saturday, I would say the only defender who looks like scoring from a corner, because we just aim it, is Big Ed. But now that Chiari's shown that he can actually head the ball near the goal, I don't even care about in it. I think, yeah, I mean, it depends on the money, doesn't it? Because I think we know that we've got an ageing back line. If you say Tonks isn't, what's he, 30, 31? Cahill's getting on there. Mama probably is going to be the one who does leave if we get a significant bit of money for his wage. So on the one hand, you say, do we want to leave ourselves short because we're bound to get more bloody injuries in defence? But at the same time, do we want to get a bit of money for a player that we didn't probably expect to get any money for? It's a tough one.
Yeah, I mean, I get the impression that Scott Dan doesn't want to leave. I'm sure he'd be quite happy to end his career out here. But if he was going to have to leave and he's completely settled where he is, I would imagine that Fulham is probably just about the only club he can go to.
Yeah.
So, I mean, we'll have to see. We're then left with the Brewster rumours. Now it's kind of come out today that Sheffield United are apparently the favoured choice for him. I don't know if this is being a guaranteed more game time style of play or something like that, and apparently they've agreed to a Liverpool buyback. But you upset, Hesketh, that Brewster's not coming to Palace, or do you think there's not really many other options out there for us that we've heard of?
Yeah, this is another weird one, because on the one hand you say, you know, he had a very good season with Swansea, but then I guess on the other hand he hasn't really done anything in the Premier League. I think he's obviously a good player. The fact that Liverpool want to buy back in there sort of makes me think that they think there's something in there. But as you say, I think he's more likely to get a lot more game time at Sheffield United than with us, because Wilf's a striker for us at the moment, isn't he? So he ain't going to get out of the team. And if we've got Ayew, Mishy will be ahead of him. You wonder sort of how much game time he'll get. So I don't know whether, yeah, his advisor saying to him, go to Sheffield and get plenty more time on the pitch. It's tough because, you know, part of me is like, what if he ends up being really good? And then the other half is like, what if he's Dominic Solanke? So,
Jordan Ibe, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I've talked about in the past that my favourite target that we've had is Edouard from Celtic. But then I guess at the same time, you say he's only playing in the Scottish League. So do we even know if he's that good? So I guess it's every transfer is a toss up, and you don't really know how it's going to go. But be interesting to see how Brewster does with Sheffield United if he goes there.
Andy Dorman had only been playing in the Scottish League when we signed him. So I think you need to just...
That's true.
You need to show a bit of respect there.
You can get some of that quality in the perfect window.
Well, meanwhile, while we're recording, Dominic Calvert-Lewin's just scored another hat-trick, this time against West Ham, so try and get him in.
What competition's that?
Carabao Cup.
Oh, I can't keep up with it.
For what it's worth, Man United are winning 3-0 away to Brighton.
Brighton fans will be happy with that.
Maybe we can do a swap deal with Dominic Calvert-Lewin for Zaha. They're desperate for him, right? So...
Yeah, that's just something that just tweaked a nerve in my neck, that
Sam was like, yeah, well, Zaha's playing as a striker now, so no one else. Like, you've made a massive assumption there that he's not going to go on deadline day. Like, I'm convinced he will.
Who do you think would buy him?
Everton. Arsenal. Really? Yeah.
You look at Everton, their front three is Dominic Calvert-Lewin, Richarlison and James Rodriguez. Is Wilf prepared to go and battle for a place there, wait or hope someone gets injured or thinks he can get in ahead of any of those guys?
I wouldn't say Rodriguez is necessarily in the front three. He's kind of everywhere, isn't he? I certainly think Zaha would find a space in the Everton team, you know, especially if they're going to be chasing a European place, albeit, you know, they won't get that till next season. But I can certainly see them taking him if they had the money.
And why wouldn't you get a European place until next season?
As in, they're chasing a European place. You know, they're trying to get Champions League this year.
Oh, I see. Okay. I mean, I think it's still very early for that to say Champions League. I think they'll be happy to make a Europa League place. I mean, they're much like Palace. They tend to be slow starters and sort of turn it on towards the back end of the season. But the one time that we started the season fast, we all know how that ended. So they could do the same. It's a long old season and they could fall off. But they seem to be going great guns at the moment. And we're about the only team in recent weeks that's actually given them a bit of a game, seemingly, with the amount of goals they've been scoring against everyone that aren't us. So yeah, there we go.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximize your home ground advantage with McDelivery. You in? Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Back of the Nest, sponsored by Pitch Sport. Fantime videos, choose your match day squad, post match ratings, and much more. Available to download on the App Store and Google Play. PitchDMM.com.
Right, talking of which, let's move into Chelsea. Now, going to the bridge, 12:30 kickoff. I believe it's on BT Sport. Been a bit of a topsy-turvy time for Chelsea this season. Opened with a 3-1 win at Brighton before losing 2-0 to Liverpool. Smashing Barnsley 6-0 in the Carabao before drawing 3-3 in dramatic fashion at West Brom in the Premier League. And then drawing 1-1 in the Carabao Cup against Spurs before losing on penalties. Let's start with Chelsea first. Heskiff, are we glad Werner got off the mark last night? Because it's it won't be against us now.
Yeah, I am. I actually thought that when I saw he'd scored. I mean, they've got a lot of good players, haven't they? But I think we all sort of said it. We were chatting at the beginning of the season when they're signing all these players. They're signing loads of like attacking midfielders and strikers, but the defence was a bit shit last year. And doesn't seem to have got any better this year. Letting in 3 goals against West Brom is not great. By all accounts, I didn't watch the game, but by all accounts, Brighton were better than them for large parts of the game, even though they won. So I think it's a game that we should go in and play with confidence. You know, I didn't think we'd get a result at Old Trafford, and we did by playing positive, still counter-attacking, but really positive football. Rather than what we've seen in the past few years at Chelsea, where we've just sort of tried not to lose, and then we go one down, and we're sort of like, "Oh shit, what do we do now?" I think they're there to be got at. I'm not saying we're going to win. In fact, I don't think we will. But it certainly seems like their defence is bang average, and if we do have a go and we hit them with pace like we did at against Man U, then there are goals to be scored for us on Saturday.
Yeah, there certainly are. I mean, I watched the West Brom game, and I mean, they were just dreadful. Every time West Brom went forward, they looked like scoring for a period of time. I mean, at the other end, West Brom were equally awful at the back, and you kind of knew Chelsea were going to get back into it. They should have scored many goals before they scored even the one. So, you know, West Brom is probably not a good marker, but Albert, if we go 3-0 up, there's no way they're going to score three against us unanswered, is there?
Oh, we can dream, can't we? It's not a particularly relevant stat for this weekend, but just a signal of how bad Chelsea's defence are is that since Lampard's appointment, no team in the Premier League has conceded more goals away from home. I know they're at home at the weekend, but you know they are there for the taking in terms of, you know, their back line. And I mean, Kepa, if he comes back in, I mean, he looks like work experience ball boy that somehow found himself in goal. Like, he's there for the taking. And I just think with our sort of counter attacking speed and sort of fluidity, I can't believe I'm even saying that about a Crystal Palace team. You know, I think we can do him real harm. But you know, like you say, they're a team that's kind of top loaded with attacking options and strikers and false nines and inside forwards and wingers, you know, so that they can certainly hurt us as well. But I think if we get a vintage Roy away performance, then I can really see us coming away with the 3 points. And I mean, I've just opened the second beer, so I've not even had two, and it feels like I'm going buck wild with my sort of predictions. But I got a good feeling about Saturday.
Yeah, well, it's 1.7 UK units per bottle, so gotta be careful, mate.
I don't even know what that means.
Now, you talk about a vintage Roy performance. What's becoming a vintage?
A good vintage Roy performance, just for the record.
Is that the sort of a good vintage is what he's expecting from Tyrick Mitchell for all the minutes he's getting?
Yeah, he must owe him a lot now.
Now, yeah, but what's becoming a Lampard vintage is having arguments on the sideline. He had a big bust up with Jurgen Klopp last season, and last night he's had a big one with Mourinho on the side. You would expect him to be mates. Now, Albert, can you see him and Roy having a big Barney on the sideline?
As Jose said in the week, you know, what's he call him, Mr. Roy?
Roy, he's the boss. He's the boss.
Boss. Now, when Mourinho calls you the boss, you know you've got a bit of clout. So if Jippy Little Lampard even dares giving it some, I'm expecting Lewington to go and give him a right old clip round the ear.
I think Roy's a bit like a mafia don, isn't he? He sort of sits at the back of the restaurant, shades on, looking cool. He's got his like pit bulls in front of him, which is Lewington, like you say. And he doesn't need to soil his hands with that sort of muck. He just lets his henchmen do the business.
Yeah, to be honest, he would probably hear it anyway, to be honest, even if Lampard is casting aspersions on him.
Sends Sean Derry and Paddy McCarthy to take him out in a boat, sort of like Godfather style.
Yeah. don't forget the cannolis.
Oh dear. Right. It's enough about Chelsea, I guess. Let's start looking at Palace now.
I was going to say Rigatoni, but I thought that'd be out of order.
Jeff Schlupp, do we know anything, Hesketh? Is he likely to be in contention?
I read that it was like a muscle strain or something. But with all these things, you know, they sort of say that. I don't know what that means. I don't know if that's like one game out or a couple of weeks.
Depends on the muscle, I reckon.
Good point. And that's why you're a med... Oh, no, you're not a medic, are you? Shit.
No.
So I think if he's fit, he probably comes back in. Although I think Eze was really, really good on Saturday. So I would hate to see Eze dropped just because Schlupp is back.
Yeah, I mean, you can see Schlupp being used when it needs to be a more defensive one, right, Albert? So
from kickoff, you mean?
But you know what I mean, in terms of in the early periods, while we're sort of getting Eze, you know, up to speed and getting him the Premier League experience and stuff, I don't think it was ever any Roy's plan to like throw him in 90 minutes every single week. But yeah, against the likes of Chelsea, Schlupp does a bit more off, well, does a lot more off the ball at the moment. I mean, I'm sure Roy will hammer that into Eze over the time to get, you know, improve his work off the ball. But yeah, against the likes of Chelsea, you'd like to have Schlupp's work rate.
Yeah, I think you're right. This is certainly nothing against Eze, because I thought he looked very, very, it just looked very comfortable. It looked very comfortable on the ball and confident. And it's weird. I met a mate of mine at work who's a QPR fan, said, you know, he's not as explosive as Zaha, but he still manages to get around a player. And he just seems to, I'm not going to use the word walk, but like he just seems to glide on the ball and just, you know, drop his shoulder. Like I say, nothing particularly dynamic, but just seemed really assured and knew how to find a bit of space and, you know, and get his head up and try and move the ball on. So I was really impressed with him. And I don't say this sort of, like I say, judging his ability or thinking he wouldn't be able to handle the game. But yeah, I mean, especially when you're adding the Roy factor, if Schlupp's fit, it's, you know, it's going to be Schlupp in for Eze. I can't see any other outcome in that sort of personal battle between those two. And you, like you say, Schlupp's going to come in and probably do a bit more of the defensive side, and, you know, probably got a bit more pace than Eze to then get the ball up the field on the break.
Yeah. Now, probably another, it's going to be another tough afternoon for Charl Ward. Heskip, do you think the handball decision could have affected his confidence at all? I mean, his face at the end of the game kind of looked like someone proved to him empirically that God doesn't exist. he's a bit like, I mean, let's face it, he's like any season when he's playing, he's targeted by teams and they try to get at him a lot. He's coped reasonably well with it all season, but he certainly looks out of sorts after that.
Yeah, it wasn't a great performance from him against Everton. And, you know, they're a good team and he's up against some good players, but he did look a bit rattled. I don't know whether that was because of the penalty or not, but he didn't look as solid as we'd like him to. So it will be tough. I think it's good that we've got Andros sort of covering him, because I think Andros has had a really good start to the season, which we discussed last week. You know, he got another assist, another good performance under his belt against Everton. And I think his energy is going to be really important, in the same way that you guys talked about Schlupp sort of covering the fullback well and being able to use pace to get up the pitch. I think Andros can do that as well. But yeah, I mean, I can definitely see them targeting Wardy, because he's, you know, I don't want to give him shit because I really like him. But I think if you are going to target one of our defence, it will be him.
Yeah, I think teams have very quickly realised that Tyrek Mitchell is not the one to go after already, because he's been doing very, very well. Number one tackler in the league already this season, which is, you know, harks back to Wan-Bissaka when he was thrown in at the deep end and just responding really, really well to things. So I think very quickly they've realised that it's back over to Joel Ward's side. Yeah, I mean, talking of Townsend, he obviously gets that defensive and the work rate in front of him from Townsend. But it would be very amiss of me to say, or not to say, that on the weekend when Townsend started off the game taking corners, my dad came over to watch the game with me and I said to him, what the fuck is he taking corners for? He's proved last season and the season before that he can't take fucking corners, and Eze's on the pitch. Just as he puts it on Chiari's head to make it 1-1. Yeah, and that shows once again I know absolutely nothing about football. Albert, now we've talked about Benteke a bit earlier, and obviously Batshuayi will be missing for this game because he can't play against his parent club. Can you see him getting any minutes in this as a sort of, you know, give us an option up front to target him, hold the ball up, etc., and just try and get more minutes under his belt anyway. Try, I don't know, just get a goal, get him in front of the world, let teams remember he exists and scores goals, and perhaps get him a move away.
Yeah, you know when you just said you don't know anything about football? No, I think we'll get minutes, whatever happens. I think if we're, you know, if we're chasing the game, you know, if we're a goal behind and there's 15, 20 minutes left, I'm sure Hodgson will throw Benteke on for at least the last 2 minutes to try and get a goal whilst we punt the ball up. You know, and similarly, I think, again, depending if Schlupp does start, you know, should we find ourselves in the position where we're, dare I say it, leading the game with sort of 15, 20 minutes to go, then yeah, I can, you know, there's every sort of opportunity for Benteke to come on and, like you say, hold the ball up, keep it in the corners, and, you know, try and bring other people into play. Or, you know, and Eze's very good at sort of putting his foot on the ball and just keeping it, you know, keeping it in possession and running the clock down. So yeah, I can see Benteke getting some minutes at the end of the game. Can't see him starting for obvious reasons. Be nice if he could sit down the Chelsea goalkeeper again. I mean, that feels like that, in my head, that footage is almost in black and white. It feels like such a lifetime ago.
That never gets talked about enough, by the way.
No, and similarly, you lot talking about them targeting Joel Ward. They better target Joel Ward when he's diving in at the far post for a diving header. You better believe it.
Still can't believe he was there to this day. Still can't believe it. Now, you say there that he's probably not going to get minutes for obvious reasons, but Jordan Ayew, goals have dried up for him a bit. Now, I say they've dried up for him. I mean, he did go a stretch last season without scoring for 17-odd games. But Heskiff, do you think his work rate under Roy and the style that Roy plays means that he's a shoe-in anyway, and it doesn't matter if the goals will come when they come?
Oof, that's a tough question. I don't think he's had a great start to the season. I think it helps him, obviously, on Saturday that Mishy can't play. But I think we'll start to see Mishy in the starting lineup sooner rather than later. If only to give Ayew a bit of a break and maybe a bit of the sort of like the competition kick up the arse that, you know, players like Andros have had and seems to have reacted really well to. Obviously, Ayew is a very good player and was brilliant last year. But I don't know if this working in this formation is helping him or not. He's not as much of a focal point. But, you know, even if he's coming off the bench with whatever, 15, 20 to play, he is really, really good at shielding the ball and keeping possession. So he's great to have off the bench, even if he's, you know, only given a sort of 15, 20 minutes worth of action.
Yeah, I think it's a good point talking about he's going to need a break at some point, because this season's rolled into last season, or last season rolled into this season, as it were. And then he went all the way to the quarterfinals or semifinals of the AFCON, maybe. And then, you know, if you remember, everyone else who came back from the AFCON, it was Kiarte and Zaha, had breaks and didn't come back to a few weeks later, but Ayew came straight back. So he's kind of on his third season in a row, basically, with no break other than the lockdown break. But even then, we know the players were, you know, be given huge training regimes to stay fit. So yeah, I mean, he's been going solidly now for a few seasons without a break, so he's going to need one at some point. Right, let's just do some predictions then. Now, I've gone back, I did a poll on Twitter, I don't know what we used to do in the early part of last season, with some puns for the results. So are we ready for these?
There's a reason why you stopped doing them. That's all I'll say.
for a loss, a simple one, Nat Havertz.
Yeah.
51% of people went for that. For a draw, Werner Classic. As in Werner.
Yeah.
And for a win, smack my Kovacic up.
Wowzers.
That's the best of the lot, but I don't know how high a confidence that is.
For the win, I'd have gone with nice little Werner.
Yeah, that's very, very good.
Write that down for the return fixture, mate, and we'll pretend I didn't say that, and I'll go, mate, that's well good, well done.
I wanted to put nil-nil draw option and just put N'Golo.
Yeah, that would have been good.
But yeah, so 26% of people going for the win. Hesketh, I know you will be in the 51% category.
Yeah, I reckon 2-1 Chelsea. I reckon we'll play really well and something will happen where they'll get like a really greasy goal and we'll lose 2-1, but we'll come away saying we didn't deserve it.
Greasy goal. I thought Pedro had left them. I don't know. There you go. And what about you, Albert?
2-0 Palace.
Obviously.
Nice, I mean, little Werner.
Yeah, very good. You can write them. You can do it next week. Oh, we ain't got a game. You can do it the week after. Have we got a game? I feel like next week's internationals, right?
I refuse to acknowledge international breaks. Yeah.
I mean, I seem to see that Benteke still got called up to the Belgium squad, regardless of anything, any form, just absolutely anything.
Yeah, you know what? The next game's Brighton at home.
When we were supposed to be back inside the stadium.
Yeah.
Oh, it's been 207 days now since the Watford win at Selhurst Park.
How's that season ticket renewal working out for you guys so far?
Well, yeah, still the deadline's been extended for making sure you secure your seat into the 30th of October. But
because so many people are doing it, so make sure you do yours.
Yeah. It's bad, isn't it?
Are you keeping a tally of how much they owe you?
Yeah, well.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I regret it. But there you go. We all make bad decisions at times. I made a bad decision when I put that poll out, for example, according to you two.
You made three bad decisions.
Right, we'll leave it there for this week. Obviously, a week off next week, and then we'll be back on the Thursday week in your ears, reviewing the big one against Brighton. Thanks for that, Hesketh, because I definitely knew it was Brighton before.
That one will definitely, definitely, definitely have a lot of swearing, followed by the word dunk.
Yeah, well, I mean, we've got a lot to talk about him. The own goals and missing sitters have been flowing from Lewis Dunk, but we'll get into that next time. Albert, thanks for coming back and joining us this week after your little hiatus.
Aspel Equator, see you later.
Oh, goodness. And, Hesketh, thanks for joining us always.
And thank you, Terence, for hosting the pod.
Oh, you're more than welcome, guys. So until 2 weeks' time, up the Palace.
It's the 90th minute. All your mates are round. You've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Your mates already got booked for double dipping and you steal the last nugget, snatching all 3 points. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. You in? At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport. Powered by fans.